Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Thank you so much for coming. We were a little surprised that that many people actually signed up for this session. Eudora and I had the impression that our two Twitter followers would come to this session, and then we'd probably be around 1,000 people. That tells us that there's a lot of interest in what's going on out there and a lot of interest around NanoServer. So thank you for taking the time. My name is Anders Wennerholt, and I work as a program manager for the Windows Server System Center and Azure Stack product team. And with me today, I also have Yudai and Philip. So Yudai and I, we are in this lucky position that if you ask him and me, we probably have one of the best jobs in the world because we actually paid to go around and found customers around the world that are willing to work together with us on the latest and greatest products that we are building, the CCE program that we call it, or the TAP programs. So we work together with customers around the world implementing our early code of Windows Server and System Center and then getting that to work in production at the customers. And then at the end of the month, we actually get paid for that. So that's very great to actually work so closely with the customers and also have to work with the latest and greatest technology to do that. So today we are going to talk about NanoServer. We have plenty of demos for you. And we're also, of course, going to talk about what is it actually that we did around the world, giving you an idea of what actually happened. Unlike marketing that has to sell NanoServer as that being a great idea, we actually have to go out there and make it work. And that is exactly what this session is all about, stuff with demos and more. So how many of you have actually seen NanoServer, tried to install it, kick the tires? Okay, that's quite a few. So thank you for spending some cycles on doing that. But the whole idea around NanoServer is actually taking the concept of server and flipping it upside down. So if we look at full server as we know it today with the full GUI and all of that, when you install that, it takes up about 15 GB as an image. And part of the challenge with that is it has all the roles, all the features they already installed. So we have stuff like print server, things like fax server that I don't know if customers are using that anymore. But all of that stuff is still in there. So what we did, kind of taking the first step towards a direction of making Windows Server smaller, we came up with Server Core. And Server Core kind of took the GUI away, and it got a bit smaller, but it was still fairly big, and it still had fax server inside, which nobody probably doesn't use anymore. So we wanted to take an even bigger step and say, okay, what if we took a Windows Server image, stripped everything out of this image, so there's nothing left but the core OS, and then we asked the customer at the point in time when they want to install a NanoServer, what are you actually going to use this server for? And then we only put in those packages, functions, and features that this server is actually going to perform. And that made a huge difference in doing that. So NanoServer is the answer to that. So when you build NanoServer, it's actually, if you just strip it out and install it without any functions and features, we're talking about 500 MB. Then when you install roles and features, you might add a few hundred MB, but that's it. I mean, I've installed many different flavors of NanoServer, and I don't think I've been able to get an image that is bigger than 900 MB. So it's really a drastic change from the full server and to Server Core. When we work with these 10 customers around the world going into production with NanoServer, it became very clear for us very fast that customers primarily wanted to use it for two things. First thing is really as a compute node. So they install Hyper-V on it, put it in a cluster, and then boot it up and use it for that. And the other scenario that we saw, it wasn't as popular as Hyper-V. That was using storage spaces. And a thing that we did with 2016 is actually you can use a combination now of compute and storage, which is a scenario we called hyper-converged. Some of the customers actually went ahead and did that on NanoServer, which where we got really great performance and really great scenarios from that. Another thing that some customers are looking at is what containers and building applications for NanoServer. Now, as Nano Server is a very stripped down OS, we took a lot of stuff out. We actually also took out the full package of .NET. So we left .NET Core in there. So a lot of customers see that as an opportunity to actually also build cloud applications for Nano Server and run that on top, as well as containers. Part of the challenge with that we don't have that many customers in the program that have actually done that, is that .NET Core came out this spring. So it's not like we have a lot of applications laying around running in .NET Core. But a lot of customers have shown interest for it. So if you want to look at who did we actually work with, so here we have some of the customers that we work with around the world. We have Ebry here, a hoster in Norway. Venso, that's a hoster in Denmark. Tieto, a hoster in Finland. And then we have Architect, a hoster in the UK. We also got some statements from some of these customers after they kicked the tires on NanoServer and actually have that running in production for a couple of months. And we have Convergence Computing here that actually one of their primary drivers for doing this was actually savings on storage. And as you can see here, RAN is saving 38% in storage and compute cost alone by using NanoServer. And they really also see a lot of opportunity to save storage. And that was one of their main drivers for actually why they wanted to go ahead with NanoServer. SC Cloud Factory here, their primary use case was that they are a hoster, and they have many different customers on the same host with VMs. So for them to reboot a host, that's very difficult for them because they need to find a window, a service window, where they can do that. So their primary argument here is because we stripped down NanoServer to bare minimum, we don't have to install that many fixes on that system. And one of the key reasons why you need to reboot a server is because you just applied some kind of fix from Windows Update. Now it needs to reboot. So with NanoServer, we actually can come down to a fraction of the reboots that you normally need to take, and that's the primary driver for SC Cloud Factory with doing that. But also, at the same time, not having to do the patching, not having to do the reboot, that's very compelling to them. So with that, I want to invite Philip up here. But before we get started with that, and Philip was a bit in the same situation here. When we worked with SC Cloud Factory, there's kind of a funny story there where they bought 8 servers, the latest and greatest from Lenovo. And they put a lot of disk in there. They put NVMe cards in. They put SSD drives. And they also had 40 gig NICs in those 8 servers. And what we decided to do when they called me and said, hey, Anders, we want to kick the tires on some new stuff, but we want to take it all the way. So we want to build an 8-node hyper-converged cluster where we run virtualization and we run storage on the 8 nodes, and then we want to put NanoServer on top. So they got the gear, we put it into the server room, and then we started actually doing, we installed NanoServer, and then we started to do performance tests. And the first test we actually did, we came up with copying 5 gigabytes a second. And 5 gigabytes a second compared to what they have today, that's a lot. But we kind of got, doing the math here, we should be able to get a lot more with 40 gig NICs and NVMe cards and all of that. So we called up Don from the networking team in Redmond and said, Don, that's something we can't figure it out. I'm not good at math, but this tells me that we should be able to get more data out of this. And I can kind of hear Don on the other side of the phone punching numbers into his calculator. I'm kind of going, yeah, you're right, there's something wrong. And then suddenly you can hear he kind of come up, I know what the bottleneck is. What do you think the bottleneck was? It wasn't the network, it wasn't the CPU, and it wasn't the storage. It was actually the PCI bus on the network card that we exaggerated, and we couldn't copy more data across because the 8-lane PCI bus couldn't keep up. And I mean, in the year 2016,
good morning.
I was not expecting that it would be the PCI bus on the motherboard that we exaggerated before network and storage actually kicked in. So that was really a great scenario where we really got some great performance with that. But giving you more customer insight, I have Philip here from Architect that will tell you a little bit about their experience and how they use NanoServer in their environment. So Philip, take it away.
Anders, thank you. Good morning, all. Now, for those of you who know me, my name is Philip Moss.
I work for AccuTech. We are a UK-based service provider. We have a client base around the world with offices in 3 locations. Now, as a service provider, I actually only really care about 3 things. Reliability, scale, performance. Only things I actually care about. Now, as a service provider, also, I have a different way of working. I focus on 100% automation. I focus on what's commonly known as the cattle not pet scenario. The situation where I have servers that are completely automated, and if one goes wrong, I just get rid of it and I rebuild it. I don't name my servers. I don't value them as individual units. It's part of a wider, automated, 100% scale out, scale up, flexible, reliable platform. Now, let's think about briefly what that really means. What I therefore really want is an OS, is one that just gets the job done. It delivers those key platform capabilities: storage, network, compute. Now, why is Nano the logical solution for that choice? Well, it's an ultra-small OS footprint. As Anders said, the base OS is less than 500 megabytes. Think about that for a second. 500 megabytes, the base OS, rather than 15 gigabytes. That means the deployment time for the OS is far, far, far faster than it is with a traditional copy to Windows Server. Second benefit, because that OS only contains the components that I put into the image when I first create it, I know what's in there, I know there's no components that I don't need or don't want in there, and it means I have greater control of my system. Third point, because it is so much smaller, there is a much, much, much smaller attack surface. That means I spend less time patching and less time rebooting. Remember, I am a service provider. My business is based on scale, availability, and reliability. Therefore, I value systems that don't require reboots and remain stable. Now, here is the key thing about Nano Server. Nano Server is Windows Server. Think about that for a second. It is Windows Server. That means I can do all of the things I do today. I can do Hyper-V, I can do clustering, I can do RDMA, I can do storage spaces direct, I can do quality of service. All of those things that I need to run my core fabric, I can do in Nano Server. So, let's think about that in more detail. For us, Nano in production, and by the way, we've had Nano in production now for 18 months, we are using it as our primary workload platform. So, our storage subsystem and the hypervisors are all running on Nano. We are delivering our VM workloads, our service workloads, our Active Directory, our DNS, our application workloads. Those are all running inside of VMs, right? Which are running larger versions of Windows. But that core fabric capability is all being delivered on Nano. Why is that important? Because again, the system stays available, I gain the reliability and the scale without the hassle of rebooting, but it's still Windows Server. Now, the fun thing is that because this is talking about Nano in production, let's talk about some of the things we're doing. So, this diagram here shows one of our Nano configurations. This is an 8-node system running on Lenovo. This system is made out of 8 of their commodity servers, their 2U high servers, and it's then connected to 2 of their commodity 10-gig switches. This is industry standard Lenovo hardware, nothing special, nothing odd, running Nano Server. This is then configured using 4 10-gig network cards, and it's also configured using RDMA, using SFP+. Industry standard technologies, industry standard components, all built running Nano Server. Let's look at another configuration we have in production. This is a configuration we have running on Dell. This is very interesting. This is a disaggregated configuration. So here, we have 4 Dell servers that are connected to external JBODs, still running storage spaces direct. But in this case, we are talking to disaggregated, separate Hyper-V hosts that are running Nano. The storage subsystem running Nano, Hyper-V running Nano. In other words, still Windows Server. In both scenarios, on Lenovo and on the Dell configuration, I'm using Nano Server to deliver those core Windows functionality. Scale file server, storage spaces direct, Hyper-V. Now, let's kind of get into a demo, because we all like demos, don't we? So I'm going to flick over to my demo screen. Ah, good, the demo gobs are working. So, What you can see in the small box on the right, this is an 8-node cluster. In fact, it's the Lenovo system you just saw. And this is an 8-node cluster running Lenovo hardware. And by the way, this system is live, and this is being pulled live from the UK. I don't believe in videos, so this is a live real-world test, and I'll prove that to you in a minute. The larger window you can see on the left is it's running a number of disk SPD tests, and it is stressing this system to the absolute max. Now, to really prove what's going on there, if I go to the back here, that is the live network traffic. And as you should be able to see from the video, you should be able to see each of those network cards fluctuating. That is pure RDMA traffic, right? Running at approaching 40 gig a second. To be very clear, that's RDMA running on Nano in a fully converged switch embedded team configuration. Now, let's look at the performance data we get. Bear 1 second, forgive me. Now, look at the numbers you're getting there. That is driving in excess of 3 million IOPS a second. Production, live workload. That is moving, what's it currently moving right now? It's moving 13.77 gigabytes of data a second. Think that through for a second. 8 nodes is moving in excess of 13 gigabytes of data a second in a storage space's direct hyper-converged configuration in production. Incredible performance, incredible power, running on Nano server. Now, by people normally clap at this point, by the way. Those are quite good metrics. Come on, I know it's Wednesday morning, but wake up. Good, there we go. Good. Goodness me, you're a tough crowd. Right, let's go back to some nice wins. So, let's kind of really talk about those big wins. I've just shown you the high performance capability we can get out of Nano server, right? In a real world production environment, so these are the big wins. Ultra-light configuration, ultra-reliable, easy to deploy and easy to manage using the technologies you already know in the way of PowerShell, right? Highly available, highly distributed, dramatically reduced attack vector, therefore reducing the number of times I have to reboot, reducing my attack surface, reducing my overheads, giving me scale, giving me performance. The power of Nano server. Now, I've given you a lovely demo of the power of Nano server. What I'm now going to do is let Anders is going to take over again, sorry. And that now Anders and then later Uday are going to talk about some of the great capabilities and some of the deeper dive demo sessions. So thank you very much indeed. And I'll let Anders take over. Thank you.
Thank you for taking us through that, Philip. That was very insightful. So now we just pretty much want to pack the rest of the sessions with demos. But those demos originate to what customers told us while we were implementing Windows Server around the world. Nano server around the world, sorry. So what I want to show you here is really some of the, let's call it concerns, that customers brought up to us during this implementation. One of the first things we hear is that Nano server is what you call headless, meaning that you can log in locally on Nano server. There is no login prompt. There is no put in your user and your name, and then you can log in on that computer, start to do your stuff. That's one of the reasons why we can keep Nano server so small. But if you look at the industry from the past 10 years, people are very used to walk up to a server and log in. So there's been some pushback for some of the customers, understandably, that they're kind of saying, we're not quite ready to work with Nano server because we're not sure how we can actually manage it in a right way if we can't log in. So what I want to do now is take you through some of the things you can actually do with Nano server, where you can use the tools you already have today to manage Nano server that you're already familiar with, even though you cannot log into Nano server locally. So let's flip over here. So what I have here is a server in Redmond. It's just running. It's a HP server, and I put Nano server on top of it. That Nano server is running Hyper-V, and it's called Anders R-Nano 01. On top of that Nano server, I have put a Windows server called Anders R-SRV2. That is my full GUI server. So consider this server my jump station from where I have installed all the management consoles that you're already using today that you already know. So what you're seeing here is the server manager console where you can actually go in and manage your service in the infrastructure. So this also includes nano servers. So the first thing I want to show you here is really that I can go in and add nano server as a server I would like to manage with Service Manager. So here I go in, add other servers. Here I type and see what kind of servers I have. And you can see here there are three nano servers. In this case, I just want to use nano one. That is the server that the whole thing is running on top of. That's the Hyper-V server that I mentioned. And I go, OK. So that was very easy adding that. So now I can actually start managing nano server using Server Manager. So if I go to all my servers here, you can see all the information. I have Anders R Nano 1 here. And if I zoom in a little bit, you can actually see all the information about this nano server. You see the IP addresses. You see that it's online. You see when the last update was actually happening. So what I can also do here is I can start managing it. So you can see I can do Hyper-V on it. I can do IIS. And I can do file and storage services, right? So if I right-click on this one, I can actually launch other consoles that I use to manage my infrastructure, such as Hyper-V Manager. So when you see, and I right-click here, you can see Hyper-V Manager pops up. And you can see it's connecting to Anders R. So here, you can actually see the server, and it's loading all the virtual machines. But on top of that, if I wanted to do something actually on the nano server and I want to configure it or manage it, I can also connect to it using PowerShell. But that is also very easy doing that via Server Manager, where I can just right-click on it. I could say Windows PowerShell here. And now you would see it's actually just connecting to the nano server, showing me a prompt where I can start running PowerShell commands, configure it, and do things that I would normally do on a server. So here, if you see, going back here, I can do common commands like So here you can just see I get the normal information, but I can run all the other PowerShell commands as well that normally comes with a Windows server. So this is really just to give you an idea that you can actually manage nano server even though you might not be a guru with PowerShell. So these are just some of the ideas, but we actually taken it a step further with Windows Server 2016. Because what we've done here also is that we have introduced a new tool called Server Management Tools. One of the challenges you can say you have with Server Manager is that Server Manager is great for managing servers in your own data center. But as soon as you go outside that domain, Server Manager might not be the right tool of choice to actually manage your servers. And as you see more and more of you having servers in your own data center, but also having servers in Azure, you want a single pane of glass from where you can actually manage these servers. And to do that, we actually have a new tool called Server Management Tools. That is what we're seeing right here. So this is the normal Azure console that you hopefully all have seen and working with today. So in here, what we can actually do with Server Management Tools is that it allows you to manage servers both in your data center and also in Azure or wherever you have these servers using a gateway that you install on a network, in the network where your servers are all living. Using this gateway, it will then go and query all the servers that you are managing and sending that data up into Azure and then allowing you actually to do this. So the gateway concept is really allowing you to only open up for one server communicating to the internet, and all the other servers that you have in that data center will just keep working and doing whatever they're doing without necessarily having to talk to the internet. So if I go down here and click on the servers, here you can see the two gateways I have running. So I installed a gateway component. It's a small package that you download from the system. I installed that on my server in Redmond. And then on top of that, in my Azure subscription, that's the number two you can see here. Let me just zoom in. So the first one we see here is the server in the data center in Redmond. And the one underneath is actually a gateway server I installed on my Azure subscription that you see right here as a VM. So if we click here, we can actually then see the servers that I'm actually managing. So you can see the first three servers are the servers that I'm actually working on here right now, where I run the IP config, and I have two more. The last two servers down there at the bottom here are two VMs that are running in Azure. So with this console, it actually allows me to manage virtual machines or servers across the board, no matter where they live, in one pane of glass here. So let's see what you can actually do with server management tools here. So here you can actually see that I clicked on Nano 1. That's the server that runs Hyper-V, the server that I was managing before, showing through the Hyper-V console and showing through the PowerShell. But here it... that was not supposed to happen. So while it's just loading the data here, it's going to take a little while. You can actually see that a lot of information about this server is actually showing in here. I can see what name it has. I can see what IP address it has. And now it actually loads up the performance of this server. So I can see the CPU. I can see the memory. And I can see the disk and network. Those graphs are showing here live in this window. But it doesn't stop there. We can actually do more. And one of the very nice things we actually have here is that, for instance, you can manage Windows updates. So I can go in here and tell what Nano servers I would like to update and actually control the order for which I'm applying patches to my infrastructure. So I can start with my least critical servers first, and then I can move up the critical, then I can move up the stack to the more critical servers later on, and I can manage that all from in here. So the other thing we have as well is File Explorer. So I can go and browse for files on the server and see what files that are actually on the Nano server, and I can see them and delete them, or actually just rename them and kind of have this work as the File Explorer we already know on Windows Server Edition. But you can see here we have many other things that you can do as well. But one of the nice things we have here is PowerShell. So the PowerShell I showed you before, where I was doing PowerShell in my own data center to the Nano server, that I can also do from this console. So for those of you that might remember the IP address I was using before, and this is typing away, this is not going to do anything, but if I do IP config here, you can actually see that I can run these PowerShell commands on the Nano server I have in the data center in Redmond. But if I wanted to, I can jump very quickly over to the other Nano server I have right here and run another PowerShell command on a VM that's actually running in Azure. So hopefully this will also give you an understanding of that you can very easily manage Nano server, even though you can log into the server locally. So one thing we also heard from a lot of customers was troubleshooting. How do I actually troubleshoot a Nano server when I can't log in on it locally? I just showed you how you could very easily log in with PowerShell. And as part of that, because Michael Cernovich also loves Nano, he actually took all these sysinternal tools. And we talked to customers and say, what are the most popular sysinternal tools you're using today to troubleshoot? And we took those and converted them so they can now also run on Nano server. So you're able to troubleshoot using the tools that you're using today on full server. You can also do that on Nano server using the sysinternal toolkit. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Yudai, and he's going to take you through some of the other things we did with our customers around the world. Yudai, take it away.
Thank you, Anders. So I hope you guys are convinced in terms of running the Windows Server with 2016 Nano Server is your default standard in your data center for your bare metal deployments. We have seen, heard from Anders, people are super interested in running Hyper-V storage, any compute storage and network workload that you deploy with Windows Server 2016. Let me just try to log in. So I hope you are convinced as well. And when we talk to the customers, I'm sorry? Right. So one of the first thing I'm sure you guys probably, when you get a chance, if you haven't already, you want to do it, you want to install the nano server. And then this is when we started talking to the customers. We sort of describe what the nano server does and what is the best way to install it. First thing you do is you pop in the DVD and say, okay, let's go and install the nano server. As you may have seen, that there is no option to install the nano server in a standard way. So we have to work out on a different options as to how it is the best way to install the nano server at scale. So what we have also built is we have built something called a nano server image builder. So because there is no standard option to install it directly from the DVD. So you have a tool which is something shortly we're going to publish it onto the GitHub, where you can either use the PowerShell commandlet to create an image that you want to deploy to your servers. If you mount the nano server ISO, you probably will notice that there is a DVD drive, there is a folder called nano server. This is where the nano server image lives. And that 500 meg image that we just talked about, in reality, that is an expanded size. So this is the nano server VIM that you see is about 156. This is the retail RCM media that you have. And you have the packages folder here in terms of, okay, what workload do you want to run? So whether it's a compute, storage, clustering, IIS, DNS. And you also have an agent that you can potentially inject into the image. So you have an agent for VMM that you can put it into the image. In order to create a bootable image, one of the things, either you can use the PowerShell to create an image, or you can say you want to create a nano server image, or you can even create a bootable flash drive. You go through the different options of deployment time, saying that this is your where your VHD is, this is where you, how much is the size of the VHD that you want to create, and you select which options do you want. So whether you want a data center SKU or whether you want a standard SKU. And depending upon which packages you want to insert, you have an option to insert the driver packages depending upon if the drivers are not already there, something that you can search and you can inject directly into the image. Then comes the critical part about joining the server to the domain, because this is a great way to install the nano server when you are doing a single node install. But when you want to roll out the nano server through the fabric, you need something and information, because what image that you are creating right now, it is a very machine-specific image. Because here, if you say you want to do nano server to do the domain join, you can join the nano server to the domain. However, that image is valid on that particular machine only, because that's where the domain blob is actually placed into the image. You can't use the exact same image to do the mass distribution unless you want all servers in your on your network to have the same identity and same computer name. Right? So you can, if you are doing a standard install of the nano server, go and download the nano server image builder, build an image, create a USB, bootable USB drive, or create an ISO, boot the server, and off you go. For an enterprise rollout, when we were working with the customer, customer have told us that this is probably not the way they can deploy it at the scale. So we had to think outside of the box. Now, if you don't believe me that the nano server is small, now let me tell you that how small the nano server is. And nano server is so small that even the WinPE is larger. There are some components that are present in WinPE that are even not present on the nano server. So one of the binaries that are missing, typically when we talk to the customer about enterprise deployment, usually when you have the Windows deployment server or some sort of a Pixie environment where you go, you import whether you want to deploy the VHD or whether you want to deploy the VIM file, right? You import the image and then something that you want to use it for the mass deployment. And typically with each image or instances of that, you will have an unattended.xml answer file that you might want to accompany so that you can do an unattended zero-touch installation. The problem with nano server in this case is, for example, for the full server, if you want to do an unattended domain join, this is the typical section that you have in your answer file that you place your credentials, and then at the time of the deployment, that credentials will be used to do the domain join. However, in the case of nano server, that is not possible, because nano server doesn't even have this component installed to do the domain join. So there are two options to do the domain join with nano server. Either you can create a domain blob, and somehow you securely transfer that blob to the nano server, and you use an offline domain join option. Or there was another creative solution that, while implementing this solution, something that we have worked with. So let me just jump onto that one very quickly and demonstrate how that complete solution works. The solution is already published onto the GitHub as well. So just in case if you are interested in when rolling, doing the mass deployment of Nano Server in your organization, these are the bunch of PowerShell scripts that you can use, and you can create a customized WinPE image. And the way WinPE image does, let me first of all run the script, so, and I'll try to describe how that solution works. This is the only probably difference that when you do the full server or server core deployment, and when you do the Nano, that's the only delta that we come across, that you have to do something outside of the box, which is you probably wouldn't have to do it for full server or server core. So this is a standard machine that I've just created here. Right, this machine is going to do the Pixie boot. Give me 1 second while I'll bring up the VM console. Right. So in very standard way, the server must have done the Pixie boot. It goes to the WDS server, asks for a list of images that are available. One of the images that you will probably have here is the image for the Nano server. You can do both. You can import the Vim file, and WDS can push that Vim file onto the bare metal servers, or even in the case of like virtual machine, it will push the Vim image to the WDS. And as a part of the setup, you can do the authentication. And then we have written, because it is a WinPE, right? So here, for example, I'm saying I want to deploy the this particular image. Again, you can script this. You can put the image selection window in your unattended.xml answer file in exactly the same way you do it for full server or server core. If you say, OK, here is your disk. OK, I'm just saying that proceed with the normal disk partition, so it will auto-format. Again, that thing can be put in into the unattended XML file so that it can be the zero touch, and that setup actually works for Nano Server as well. Same with Windows Server. And here is we are in WinPE. It gets an image. Again, this is not a performance demo because this is everything is running inside the VM. But then we will transfer that 500 megabyte of image that we have on WDS. We copy it onto the machine. We run the post-installation task. And one of the post-installation tasks is that we have the customized WinPE image, and what that WinPE image does is that it will read the unattended.xml section, so this will not get processed by the WDS, but the PowerShell will read this script, will use these credentials, and then get the offline domain blob, right? And now that script basically kicks in. It will use that credential, find an available domain controller, gets the offline domain blob that you need. So this is, we are not even booting the Nano server. This is where we are in WinPE. Apply the image. We do support the wildcard as well. So if you notice that there is a hash number, so in the case of hash, it will derive the random number. Use that computer name. Do the domain blob join. If the domain controller is, if it finds the domain controller available on the network. So this is your offline domain blob that typically you need in order to do the domain join. You have an image that is laid down onto the system. And we will mount the image, apply the blob, and when the next time the server boots up, that server is already a domain join, right? So if you think about that, let's say if you want to do a hundreds of Nano server deployment in your network, instead of creating a per machine based image and then distributing it through the USB or distributing through ISO, et cetera, you can use something like very traditional technology that you can use. And this is from this point onwards, this Nano server is pretty much like any other server that you have on your network. You can manage server management tool. You can use the regular MMC. This machine is ready to be domain joined and it's available on the network, right? So this is the only one lesson that we learned from the field is that Nano server didn't have that capability built in, but something that we can do outside of the Nano server with customizing the WinPE image so that we can actually do the domain join and you can roll out the Nano deployment at scale. The second part, the second kind of workload that we have seen that customers were super interested into that was Shielded VM. So I'm sure you have seen, those of you who have attended the keynote session and general session about how the Shielded VM works. Now, Shielded VM is the most secure version of VM that is out there, and the customer have told us that they want to run it on the server on the most secure version of Windows, which is the Nano server. What does the Shielded VM do in terms of functionality and the features is that it gives you the data at rest encryption, so it meets lots of compliance standards, lots of compliance requirements that you might have. It also does, it protects the data at runtime as well. It gives you an isolation between typically what happens, and this is common across all the hypervisors that are out there in the world, including the competition, right? One thing that is for sure that if you give your data to someone and it is running on a machine, and administrator typically have an access to the data. What we are trying to do with Chilled at VM is we're breaking that boundary. This is something revolutionary in terms of when it comes to protecting and safeguarding the customer data. With Chilled at VM, despite someone being a hypervisor administrator, they cannot interact with the virtual machine in any fashion. So to demonstrate that, I'm just going to jump onto one of my machines here, which if it is a Chilled at VM, one of the things you will notice that disk itself is encrypted. So if it is a Chilled at VM, if it is a normal VM, you can double click it, you can see what data it is. If it is a Chilled at VM, that VHDX is BitLockered. It gives, if someone tries to access to the data offline, so this is the talking, delivering the promise of data at rest. Even if someone gets hold of the VHDX file, they cannot access, they cannot read the data, they cannot see what it is unless they have the BitLocker key, which is usually the secret that we protect inside the virtual machine. So there is no opportunity for any hypervisor administrator or storage admin who get access to your data. Then other thing that we do with Chilled VM, which is, I think, something probably when you see, you will realize that what promise it is delivering. So here is one thing which I want to start. So let's say if someone managed to get access to the Hyper-V machine, right, they are the local admin. So it means that they can run any tool that they might like. Right, there is nothing stopping them running the tool because they are the hypervisor administrator. Now, if I'm a hypervisor administrator, okay, it's not expected. Give me 1 second while connectivity restores. So one of the popular tools that is out there, if you are local admin, and the problem with the local admin privilege also gives you a debug access. So if you have any intrusive tools, for example, like WinDBG, right? With WinDBG, what you typically do is you can run and you can debug and you can interact with the virtual machine in any way. So this here is one thing which I want you to focus on. So for example, here is the I'm going to connect to my remote machine. So this is the nano server with TPM running on the network. I'm using the standard tool to connect to the virtual machine. It will render the virtual machine that you have out there. So here is the standard normal machine that you have, and you can see the machine is running. You can see the CPU, memory, et cetera, it is doing its job. Now, if I'm an admin, let's say if you are a hoster, and if your VM is running somewhere else on someone else's premises, right? And if they have an admin right where your virtual machine is running, unaware of the fact that because they have an admin right, so tenant doesn't even know what attack vector that exists. And here, because I have a, I've started a command line window with debugger, and here I have a full access to the virtual machine. As you might have noticed here, the time on this virtual machine is literally stopped because I am debugging that process outside that. So from a hypervisor administrator point of view, they have an access to the running machine. They can see what data it is, what memory it is, et cetera, right? And this is common across all hypervisors that are out there. With Chilled VM, the thing that is different, so here again, I just want to demonstrate that the time is stopped. So if you read it, it's 503.23.44, right? If I try to manipulate that VM from here, you can see the time has jumped because I had a debug privilege on the hypervisor where your VM was running, right? I can interact that VM in any shape or form. I can get any data that I want. If I try to do exactly same thing with on a Chilled VM, it will not happen. Because exact same commandlet that I have used it before, same VHD, same admin privileges, but for this instance, if I try to connect to the Chilled VM and try to connect to that process, same VM worker process. Now this VM worker process is for the Chilled VM, and if I try to do it, I can't do that. Now think about that. that Shielded VM is the most secure VM that is out there, and now it is running on a nano server, which is the most secure OS version that is out there. Right? So if you are a hoster or if you are an enterprise, think about in every branch office deployment where you have a domain controller running there with, where you cannot guarantee the physical security. Shielded VM delivers on that promise because you have the nano server, which is headless, so there is very limited opportunity to interact with the Hyper-V host. And then on top of that, you can put a shielded VM where there is no way even remotely that any hypervisor administrator or anyone who have physical access to the machine can actually manipulate the state of the VM. So that is one of the very popular workload that we have seen customer who are using the nano server in, or who have used it deploying the shielded VM. The other part of that, another thing which I want to now take this session into the different direction is about using the nano server for an application workload. So we have seen the nano server as a great candidate to run your storage, scale out file services. We have some incredible performance numbers with the storage, IOPS, et cetera. We have seen the hyperconverged scenario with Hyper-V, people running the multiple virtual machine, shielded VM. But another kind of a segue into the cloud or next generation application is nano server is the great candidate to run your applications. That exists, applications that are existing that are already out there. Now, one of the first thing that people ask me, okay, what else the nano server can run? Because there are packages that you have seen for IIS, DNS. It has the DSC, so desired state configuration in order to configure your nano server, Hyper-V and storage. Now, in terms of your own first-party application, what are the different tools that are out there? So, for example, we have released a tool which is the Nano Server API scan. So, if you have an existing binaries that you want to see whether it is compatible to run on a Nano Server, you can use that tool to see, does that my application that are out there, can it run onto the Nano Server or not? So, okay, I have my favorite application that is that I'm running locally on my machine, and if I want to see whether it can run on nano server or not, so Minecraft, right? Can we run the Minecraft on a nano server? You can use the tool, and you can see and scan the binaries, and actually see that is this application compatible or not? So for example, this Minecraft application might not be suitable for the nano because the nano only runs the 64-bit. Right? So nano, again, if you have any 32-bit processes, then in that case, nano server is not good to run that because server is 64-bit, so it has to be 64-bit. Then you can use there are some command line tools that you use which you might work on a nano server, but it might not work on the nano server because nano server is the reduced footprint. So one of the things that you have to ensure is that tools are compatible. So for example, here is another command which is a set SPN. This is something that we use to set the service principal name record for your Kerberos and et cetera. So that set SPN, which is a standard binary exe, you can run the tool and you can see whether you can run it on nano server or not. The other part of that, so this gives you a good idea in terms of for your applications that are out there, can you run it natively on the nano server or not? If you are, for example, a developer or if you're writing an application, one of the other things that we have done is in Visual Studio, you have a standard template where you can, let's say, create a new project. And we have a standard template. You can select the nano server application. If you write an application with this template, that application will natively run on nano server itself. So that makes a great, it's a minimized footprint, and then you can run that application natively onto the nano server. We also have a great support for writing and developing and debugging the application onto the nano server as well. So here is, for example, some semi-science project application that calculates the Fibonacci sequence numbers, right? This is the standard C++ app that I have just written. Well, if I compile that app with the nano server project type, I can set a debugger. I can go to the, let's say this time around I want to run it on my nano server, and I can just say I want to use the remote Windows debugger. And in this case, we can remote onto the nano server that is running out there on your network. So just to prove the point, now this time around it will go out. I have configured my remote debugger setting in Visual Studio, and that application will natively run on Nano, and you can write a new app. Now, another part of that, which is also something why I'm talking about this and why it makes sense. In Nano, you must be aware of the .NET framework versions that are out there. So we have a standard .NET framework, and then we have a .NET core. And then on the standard .NET framework, we have ASP.NET version 2, 3, 5, and the list goes on with web forms and MVC. On the parallel with the .NET core, which is a universal app, right? With .NET core, you have the framework and runtime available on Windows, Linux, Mac, you name it, we have the runtime available. So with Nano, we have the native support of .NET core. So if you are a C++ developer and if you have a native app, you can run it on Nano, you have the Nano templates. If you are a managed, if you have a managed core or a .NET, you can run it using the .NET core. Nano has the .NET core that is built in, and that app will run natively on the Nano server as well. So we have a .NET, ASP.NET core, and same way with MVC. So there's a huge incentive for the developers and people who are writing a next generation application to use the .NET core, and that .NET core applications will run natively on the Nano server. Now, why does that matter? Because of the footprints and the support for the container. Nano server has the support for storage and compute. Equally, Nano server has the support for Windows containers as well. Now, if you look at the left-hand side of what is the traditional virtual machines, in this case, you have the hardware, you have an operating system, and you have a VM where effectively each VM runs its own instance of operating system. Whereas with containers, it's much more optimized and streamlined in a fashion that you have your hardware, or you have an operating system, and then each instance of the container shares the same image that you have with the operating system. So in the case of Nano server, for example, when you run the container on Nano, right, it will have the Nano server image. Now, that was when customers trying to evaluate that running the next generation application workload. So think about your IIS, ASP.NET application that is already out there. Now those applications might be using .NET 3.5, .NET 4 framework. So how can you run those applications on a Nano? Because currently you might be using full server or server core with IIS, with .NET 3.5 or .NET 4 installed. Now, if you want to run that application on the Nano, how can you run that? Because now in the containers, when you have sharing the same image with the base operating system. So in the case of that with Nano server, what we have discovered is that there is another type of a container where you have the Windows container, and then you also have the Hyper-V container. So with Hyper-V container, you can have a Windows server core image, and that is running natively onto the Nano server. So for example, let's say if you have an app that uses a SignalR or WebSocket, right? That functionality, if it is not available natively on Nano server, then you can containerize that app. And when you create a container, you can say instead of running, let's say, Nano server container, you can use the container which is a server core container. And then you can start that container with the Hyper-V isolation so that you can have the legacy app that is running onto the Nano server. So in order to demonstrate that, I mean, there is a one sample app that we work, which we know of, that the customers what is trying to do. So here is like some sort of application compatibility that I want to demonstrate about how customers we know that have are planning to use the Nano server for. So here is like standard probably producer consumer kind of an application where you have n number of producers creating the work item. You create the store that work item in any queuing system. So in this case, for example, I'll use the Redis to store those queue as a persistent queue. And then you have an asynchronous processing done by the n number of consumers, but everything running onto the containers and everything running natively onto the Nano server. So in order to demonstrate that sample application, so one of the things that, for example, from an application point of view that I'm trying to do, which is here is my web application that I run. And when I create that container, what I'm trying to say here is that I want to create this container which is based off a server core image. Instead of using the Nano server, I'm saying because my app only runs on server core because that functionality and the feature, for example, this is a .NET 3.5 app. And this .NET 3.5 is not available onto the Nano. So in that case, I say currently I run my app on my server core, so I will use the server core as the base image. And what are the steps that I need to do when I run this app, usually in my existing 2012 R2 environment? So this app needs a web server. This app needs the ASP.NET 4.5, and this app also needs the web sockets in order for SignalR to work. So I create a container. And inside the container, I said, I want this functionality and the features. And this is the server core container. So if server core supports anything, you can have the exact same command that you want to repetitively do. You can create a base image out of that. And then here, what I'm trying to see is I'll copy the website that is needed into the inetpub/www root. So this is where IIS stores their web file, right? And here is what I have created, the container. This is as simple as that. Now, if I want to run this app, I create a container. So let me just. Save this command so you don't see me making a mistake. I can get the copy pass. Right. So here is, I'm saying that build this image with that the build file, Docker build file that I have described for my app. And here you have the server core. It has done exactly what I have said in the build step, and I have an image that is available right now. And now I can run this image. Let me see, first of all, if I have an image. So if I do Docker PS, okay, I have an image that is already running. So in this case, I'm just going to say, stop this image so that I can start this image again. Right, so this image is stopped. I have that. And then I'm just saying simply the image that I have already built. Right, and here I'm saying, okay, I'm still waiting for that container to be stopped. But here I'm saying here is the port 8080 that I want to expose onto the Hyper-V and then run this app. So this app that I'm running inside the container has the connectivity to the host and people can reach it. I need to use the -force option to stop the container that is already running. So the container is stopped. And here, when I'm starting the container, now again, I'm running it onto the nano server. I'm connecting my Docker, which is Docker EXE, the Docker engine that is running on my full server, or it could be on your developer machine, but it is targeting the server, which is running on the server nano. And I'm saying the isolation type is an Hyper-V. So that way, if you have a legacy .NET app that doesn't run natively onto the nano, you can still deploy the nano for your host, and then you can containerize the app. And with containers, you get the flexibility and the agility that you can actually do the scaling as well. Now, how does the scaling actually work for running the containers inside on the nano server? So I have described the service. I have the n numbers of producers, and I have n numbers of consumer. I can describe this my entire service definition. And again, this is nothing specific to nano. This is how you have the full support of Docker on nano server. So if you look at my service Docker Compose file, right here, what I'm trying to say is that first of all, build the Redis, because my app needs the Redis in order to store the messages that is coming from my producer, right? So we have a Docker file, build the Redis, and then I have a producer, and inside the producer, I'm trying to say here is my build file, and go and build the producer and consumer, and I can initialize some environment variable, because for example, my producer needs to know where is the Redis endpoint that I need to connect, because between my dev environment and my test environment and production environment, it might be very different. So I can initialize those variables. I can build the Docker file. And here, like, I can come up with, I have the full support for Docker at Docker build and Docker compose here. So one other thing which I can do here now is if I run this, so here, I'm just using that Docker Compose file to start my service. So here it is trying to create the Redis. So it gets the nano image, download the Redis component that is required, configure the Redis. And here you can see, and here is a web app that I talked about. Now this web app, as I said, this is running as a Hyper-V container. And as you can see, that I can scale up, scale down. And now these consumers and the producers that I'm running, right? Those are running as a container on my nano server. So if I have an app that I can run, so this is a .NET Core app, right? And that is running directly on this machine. And now if I want, I'm scaling it, the produce, I want 5 producers, I want then 5 consumers, so you can see the graph is balanced out. And then I can dynamically scale up and scale down, right? So here is the hybrid app. The web app that you're seeing into the browser on the right-hand side, that is running as a Hyper-V container on Nano. The producers and consumers, that is running in the .NET core, so that is running as a .NET core. So I have best of both worlds on Nano. I can have the Nano image, which is the stripped-down OS, and my app is also using the Nano container, so which is also the stripped-down, less, much more resource-optimized than, for example, running it onto the full server, right? So here is the various different ways where customers that we're working with are playing with Nano Server as their sort of next generation of application that they want to build and they want to run here. One other part which, so here I can dynamically scale up and scale down. Let me just get rid of the service. And to demonstrate the part which is, I think, the key takeaway of like why the customers are doing it or what we have learned from the customers while they are doing it, is this is a universal app. So one of the other part of doing that, you probably will have noticed, one thing which we can do in, and this is from, because it's the .NET Core project, I can publish this project as a Win10, so it is a Windows image, so it can run natively on Windows container. But I can also publish and create a various different output of that. So one of them is, for example, I created another output of this application which can run natively on Ubuntu. Now, exact same tool, same functionality, that is something that we are using it here. Here's my Ubuntu machine where I have published this, my images. And I'm just saying here, go and build this service, right? And here, the exact same image. So now, think about the implications or the powerful feature of this .NET Core where you have an app that can run on Nano on Windows container. You also have an S, very same app, packaged in very same way with Docker build file, Docker compose file, right? So I build and service, it is available here. And this time, my service, this one that we are seeing it, now this is connecting to a complete different endpoint. And one of the other things that you also have now, we have made the PowerShell available on Linux as well. Right? So if you have the same PowerShell scripts that you are used to use and you are managing it, you can run exact same PowerShell script on Linux. And here, you will see exact same way, the same app that was running on .NET Core, on Nano, on a Windows container, the same app that is running .NET Core on Ubuntu, on Docker as well. So it's a great flexibility and agility in terms of how you can actually deliver the services running natively onto the Nano server. So one of the other popular workloads that we have seen customers are playing with it is this one. And this is what I want to, again, highlight, that instead of making these decisions in terms of how and where your app should run, developers can write an app. Then from a runtime point of view, as an administrator, you can decide whether you want to run it on Windows or Linux if it is a .NET Core app. And if you want to run it on Windows, you can run it natively on Windows, on Nano server, or you can run it inside the container. And for those apps that cannot run natively, you can run it as a Windows Server container or a Hyper-V container. So typically what we have noticed, the decision tree or the flow chart the customers usually follow when it comes to the writing the first party application onto the Nano server is, does that Nano application can run natively on Nano server, then run it natively. Does that application need to be isolated? Because one of the other things with Hyper-V containers you can get is the level of isolation. In that case, it's better and much more resource constrained. You can apply the different policies when it is a process container or whether it's an Hyper-V container. And then if that application cannot run inside the container, then there is always a de facto sort of default option is you can run this application inside the VM. But at the end of the day, what we want in your data center with this whole cloud notion is that any bare metal deployment that are out there, we definitely recommend that you deploy the Nano server. If it is a storage or compute workload that you are running it, run it natively. You have the different packages. If you have your own applications, any IIS server that are out there, any .NET apps that are out there, any Win32 services that you have, as I said, try to optimize it running inside the container if you can. If not, you can always deploy those virtual machine inside the VM. One of the other part, which is also something, this is slightly related to the container, but in the context of nano server, it is important that when you have the container, because a lot of apps that we have seen has the dependency with your Active Directory in order to do an authentication. Think about, you have a web server app needs to talk to the SQL server, and then you need to do the Windows integrated authentication to the SQL server. Now, that is a problem for the container, because typically you don't want hundreds and thousands of containers to join to your Active Directory, because if you do that, probably Active Directory admins might not be too happy with that, right? So containers don't join to the domain in a traditional way. But, however, what we all can do with Nano Server and on the container is you can actually have a global managed service identity that you can associate with the container, right? So when the container starts up, you can define the permission that particular set of container can use that MSA account, the global managed service account. So when it goes off the network in order to do an authentication with SQL Server, with file server, whatever the dependencies that applications has out there, you can use that identity and you can do the authentication. With that, I just want to end this session with this key takeaway of Windows Server. When it comes to deploying with 2016, please consider the Nano Server as your default choice for running in your data center. Deploying, and I hope that through this session, I mean, we have the great tools of management tools available remotely via PowerShell UI with web browser-based interface. You have the traditional MMC. All of those things works in exactly the same way it works on a full server. It does on the Nano Server as well. And this is a great way to start your Windows Server 2016 journey by introducing the Nano Server in your Cloud Fabric. And we have the Nano Server images that is also published into the Microsoft Azure as well as a gallery item. So if you are writing any modern apps that you need to host, that app should go directly and use onto the Nano, because with Nano you have a greater flexibility to host these apps on a Nano container or a Hyper-V container if you need a greater level of isolation. So with that, I would like to thank you very much for attending this session. We're going to be here around if you have any questions and if you want to chat with us. Thank you very much for your attendance, and enjoy the rest of the Ignite. Thank you.